I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran. And this is Radio versus the Martians.
Speaking of going to the movies, I've gone to the movies.
Congratulations.
I mean, of course, I pick my time so that I'm not going in there with a crowd. I think once I went in...
You went at 7:45 a.m.?
I tend to go later.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm a night owl. So, but I mean...
Dude, if I could go to at a 7:45 a.m. movie, I would. I would absolutely go.
But it's the best time. And then the other thing with assigned seating is you can sort of see how many people are there before you buy your ticket on that little seat map.
That's such a blessing in any time. Just, I mean, if I could consistently have it such that I don't have a stranger near me for like 2 hours or something, that would be a gift.
That's my life. Just like, get away from me.
If I could just always pick the like crow's nest or something like that too, where it's just kind of like, don't sit behind me. Don't breathe near me, like COVID or not. Like, I don't want to hear you. Or popcorn, like I'm weird about this. Like if I have my friends or whatever, that's lovely enough, but it's like I am always the person that like tries to finagle everyone else to be the seat next to the stranger. So yeah, seat maps, thank God.
Hermetically sealed phone booths that you step into and they elevate above the crowd up near the ceiling with their own sound system. That's what I would want.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're literally over everyone else and you're behind like 2 inches of, you know, air-gapped glass and you have your own sound system and you don't have to see or hear any of them.
But I found that the thing that had been changing at almost all the theaters they've been remodeling, which is that they've got big recliner seats that have more space on both sides of it, that they'll frequently break them into groups of 2 or 3.
Mm-hmm.
And that in itself is enough to separate you. Plus the chairs are bigger.
Yeah.
So there's fewer seats in every theater. So it's so much better that these things were not built to make it more COVID friendly, but they have the unintended consequences of making theaters better.
Well, we've got, before the pandemic, I volunteer for Olympia Film Society, and we were doing this bit to essentially like restore the theater and get new seating in there, I guess is a way to put it.
But they like reclaimed seats from another theater?
Something like that, yeah. I think, was the aim. I don't know how they ultimately ended up, but I know that the goal was essentially to be able to have these beautiful old style seats because the theater is like, what is it, 1929 maybe?
Cool.
I don't know. I'm trying to remember that. I'll have to check at some point. But they were trying to get these old, beautiful old style theater seats that they essentially like click and buckle into the floor. And so part of the historical space for its utility was that you could do shows there. And so anything that you needed, you know, a floor for, like they have Reverend Horton Heat through there all the time.
Oh, nice.
And it's always just such a hazard when we do that because the old seats stayed buckled down and people are going to dance. They're going to do it. And you just get in the aisles instead. And it's always kind of funny. But we're supposed to be opening up again, and I've got a shift next Sunday, and I cannot wait to go in there and see what they've done. I'm hoping that they have the seats that we had been raising funds for. But it was, I hear you, Mike, like I can't wait to get back physically into a theater, even if it's running, you know, running projection and then just like being that gargoyle up top next to the booth, where that was always such a gift, looking over everyone else's heads and the top balcony and just, sorry, that's a rambling story.
No, it's so cool.
Joy.
But for like an ADHD kid like me, movie theaters are kind of wonderful because when I watch a movie at home, I've got my phone, I can pause at any time and take a bathroom break. And then on the way back from the bathroom break, I should check my phone or I end up in another room, or there's all of these different elements that can get in the way of, nope, this movie is happening. If I take a bathroom break, I'm missing some of it. I should pee before I go in. I don't understand. I've never had a problem with bathroom breaks. I think I've gotten this far in life and that's not starting. I think I'm pretty golden for a while. And
thank goodness.
With that sentence, I curse myself.
Yes. I curse you silently as well.
Like, oh shit, I'm going to have some sort of urinary tract problem starting next week.
Everyone, if you've got spare cranberry juice, just send it to Valverde.
Yeah.
101 Commando Street, Valverde.
But it isn't just the sound system and the picture being really good. It's the sense of I am watching a movie and that is all that I'm doing right now. And I'm immersed in it in a way that it's often hard to, because it literally turns the lights out everywhere but on the screen. The sound is loud enough that even if I wanted to have a conversation, I wouldn't be able to have a good one. And I am, it's like an isolation booth. And for somebody like me who can be very easily distracted by everything around me, that's like a godsend. And I forgot how much I miss that.
Well, in the inverse, not the entire pandemic, pretty much as soon as they were able, I had started going back to Skyline Drive-In in Shelton.
Oh, nice.
It is spectacular. When I moved here from California, that was one of the three you're screweds, essentially, from my dad, including what are you going to do for real baseball? Because we have the Mariners out here and that's not sufficient, apparently, to my dad.
Where's your dad live?
I kind of grew up near Palm Springs, California.
Oh, yeah. In the desert.
Yeah, in the desert. Yeah. And so, actually, 5 minutes from the dinosaurs in Pee-wee's Big Adventure, tell your friends. but my dad, you know, when I first moved here 11 years ago, his arguments were thusly. It was just like, well, what are you going to do for baseball? And I'm like, well, Dad, I mean, I'll wait for the Red Sox or Angels or somebody to come through Safeco, obviously. I was okay. What are you going to do about theme parks? I'm like, well, I'm completely screwed on that front. That's not a thing they do in the Pacific Northwest. So I'll just come home and visit. Okay. Got you on this one. What are you going to do about drive-ins? They can't have that in Washington because it rains all the time. And the first thing I did when I found out about the Skyline, I pull in, I call my father and I go, hey, Dad, how's it going? He's like, oh, good. Is everything okay? Yeah, spectacular. Want to know where I am? Yeah. Drive-in. He's just like, oh no. And I just hung up the phone. Anyhow, Skyline was open because the perfect thing for social distancing, of course, cars.
Yeah.
Right? I love drive-ins. That's my preferred way to see a movie.
Oh.
Because obviously I can do what I like. I'm still working on quitting smoking. And so that's a lovely thing. You just move yourself to the side. I
hadn't thought about that at all, which is that it's probably the last bastion of a sort of a public movie exhibition that people who smoke can actually smoke while watching a movie.
It's such a gift because dependent too on the sound system in those older theaters, whether they're still in, you know, intact, the posts and the radios and whatnot, you can often too just bop out of your car. You can sit in the grass. You can still hear the movie. If you go in to get a snack, guess what? The screen is giant. The snack bar windows are massive. Mm-hmm. And it's piped, of course, through the radio.
Yeah.
So you don't miss a thing.
Right.
And so you could pop and get whatever you like. And then it's also way cheaper than the average movie. And you get two of them. So I go to Shelton Drive-In and $8, I get two movies. Saw Black Widow there recently. Nice. And saw Alien. If you haven't seen Alien outside with the stars above your head in your own tiny tin can, you haven't experienced Alien in this really physical way. I recommend it to everyone. But
start, though? I mean, we live so far north on the globe.
You're going to be in trouble if you try, Casey. If you're 7:45 in the morning person, good luck.
Mike, I feel like it's like 10 p.m. is probably the time when you can really get a good picture if it's being projected.
On the nose, especially if you have to pay attention to which show order it is, too. Because we ended up seeing Black Widow and, regrettably, Cruella. thank God Cruella was second, but usually the rule for me is like the first, you know, the movie I'm most interested in has to be first movie. I will tolerate as much as I can of the second, or it's a bonus. And, you know, worst case scenario, you paid $8 for one good movie or $4 for two passable movies.
Is it, do they pay, this is probably different for every single drive-in, per person or per car?
It is different for it is different for every drive-in. But in the case of Shelton, when they were announcing that they were back open at the Skyline, they were doing eight per car for a little bit. And they were also giving you snack bar coupon sort of things.
They want more people to buy snacks, obviously.
Yeah,
that's where the money comes from. Yeah.
Well, so what movie did you see in the theater that you braved The contagious.
What was wasteland. the first one I saw in theaters after it had been about a year, more than a year and a half. I think my last movie that I saw in theaters was in February of 2020. And then like a month later, everything shut down. I saw Nicolas Cage in Pig.
Ah, okay. We have that coming through OFS pretty quick
here. Oh, you haven't seen it yet?
I haven't gotten to. Can't wait.
I don't want to spoil it because I definitely want us to do an episode on Pig at some point.
Yeah, we might need a year's time, though. I keep thinking about this and think that instead of trying to be timely, which we're... Our recording schedule makes it hard for us to be timely about certain things. If we had like a year, I think,
yep,
we could probably. But it was a fantastic movie. If it's still in your movie theater, by the time you hear this, you should go and watch it. It
probably isn't, but I think it's also not the movie that you think it is based on trailers.
Mm.
And that makes it better. It's not John Wick with Nicolas Cage and a pig. It's something much more contemplative and quiet and thoughtful, and I really, really liked it, and I don't want to say anything else about it, but it is amazing. It's a really good movie, and it's a reminder that Nicolas Cage is amazing when it comes to giving him over-the-top schlock and letting him just go to town on it, because he has an ability to let himself go and free himself from insecurity and lets himself be silly or crazy or over the top. But he's also really great when you give him something nuanced and layered and subtle. And it's a reminder of that it feels like in a lot of ways this movie is a metaphor for Nicolas Cage, in that he went away for a while, just like his character in the movie, and that he's kind of been in this weird place, and he comes back and you remember that he's amazing.
I think next year, they've already filmed it or will. He's starring in a movie that is about himself. It's like this, like the inescapable amazing talents of Nicolas Cage or something. So he's doing a movie that I think is probably like JCVD, mm-hmm. where the actor is playing a version of himself, and of course it has to be a self-analysis. It's about himself, but it's of course about a sensational movie version of himself. So I'm curious to see how that's going to play out. But I think you're right about Nicolas Cage, is that three times out of four, he is in a movie that they want him to do like a freak out. They want him to be like meme Nicolas Cage. And that's the reason why people are like, oh yeah, we'd love this. He's clearly more than that. If you've ever watched Adaptation or mm-hmm. Leaving Las Vegas, you'll be like, no, this guy is a real actor who can like sell you on things that are just incredible. And he also can be the guy who looks like he's like trapped in a Fritz Lang movie and moving his arms around and being like totally expressive. He can be those two things at the same time. And we just forget because everyone likes him to be that freak out guy.
It's kind of like he's kind of positioned himself in pop culture as this weird halfway point between Crispin Glover and Jim Carrey of a certain kind, where there's a strangeness to the decisions that he makes, but you kind of want to see him become a bit of a cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like is that he's more than just that. His character in Pig is very quiet. Quiet, and they're just... I don't want to say anything because I feel like we're starting to cut into the conversation we'd have on the episode.
Yeah, and we wouldn't want to ruin anything for you.
I would say that it's a movie that's almost best if you go in blank. And that's the other thing I've kind of discovered this year again. Rediscovered, because I've known this before, is that we live in a world where trailers start like 2 years before the movie comes out. And now with the pandemic, it's like 3 years. We've seen trailers for a Bond movie that is probably never going to be released.
Well, I try to avoid trailers entirely at this point because one of two things happens. They're selling the wrong movie in the wrong genre, which just constantly. Or you give me all the beats and I have zero interest anymore. It's like, all right, cool. Like, especially the Marvel trailers. It's like, please stop giving me all your terrible one-liners right here. You know, they're all the exact same trailer anyway at this point. So I'm like, I don't glean anything useful from it. And it more often than not, like, colors my experience in such a way that like makes me unfair. I think
so too.
Yeah.
Because you go in and you feel like you're looking for new things, and it's almost like the people who made the trailer took away your ability to take new things from it because they've left you very little. And if it's not a particularly deep movie, I think the people who made trailers for Pig are, I think they, you, I don't know. I don't even know if you can make a good trailer for that movie, because you can either give away what it is, and at the same time, I know if their goal is to get butts in seats, the specter of a crazed Nicolas Cage avenging a pig, a la John Wick, is the thing that puts butts in seats.
Right.
And then you end up just making people disappointed because they're looking for the wrong movie.
But for that movie, it's actually not, that's not a trailer decision. I mean, some of these things could be like, consider the ultimate example that we talk about, the Terminator 2 trailer. So yeah. Terminator was okay. That movie where, yeah. where you basically, if you saw the trailer, you came into it knowing that now the things was reversed and Schwarzenegger was a good guy. But obviously, James Cameron didn't shoot the movie that way. There isn't a text crawl at the beginning that says, yeah. Terminator's a good guy. Like, there are things that are meant to provoke the response from the audience as you're unfurling this character and this scenario, right? In Pig, at the beginning, you have things like he has a knife that he's cutting with, and he, like, throws it to the ground, and it goes, twong, and sticks in something. Like, you're thinking, oh, he's a fucking badass. Like, wait till he cuts someone open with that knife. Like, the filmmakers are actively playing this this thing. It's like, you think he's going to start kicking ass pretty soon, right? He's just going to break open.
Yeah.
So it's not just something that was created by the marketing as a clever way to get people's attention. It was clearly part of the narrative that the filmmaker wanted to work with, right?
Is this another movie that's like one of those children's chicken nuggets where there's a serving of vegetables in it? You've been tricked into seeing a smart, contemplative, philosophical movie.
I could see why people would be pissed about that, too. I mean,
yeah.
more so often now when I watch something and I really enjoy it and I'm thinking or writing the reasons why I like it.
You cut the pumpkin and there's a cake inside.
Yeah, I like the idea of thinking about the person who would walk out of this movie and why they would walk out of this movie. And for certain, like, this is the type of the person for whom, if they had watched Willy's Wonderland, which is a Nick Cage movie that came out last year, that's the pitch is... You know, the what is it, the Rockafire band, Chuck E. Cheese
and
they have animatronic animals that play songs. Well, what happens if there was like evil animatronic animals that were attacking you?
Banana Splits movie.
You call in Nicolas Cage to come and kill them all. Like, yeah. If the person who would see that movie, who would see Willy's Wonderland, would come into this movie at about like the 25-minute mark, they'd be like, what the hell? And they would get up and they would go.
Why isn't he punching a room full of people? They kind of want it to turn into Old Boy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's I love
Old Boy. Yeah. But it's not Old Boy. Yeah, it's strange. But speaking of the Terminator thing, I have kind of rediscovered something on YouTube, and I think there's a bevy of these channels that have popped up because of the pandemic, which is YouTube channels where millennials and Zoomers watch older movies and react to them, and then they edit it down to like 20 minutes.
Ooh.
And Terminator 2 has been one of my favorite things to watch because they've just watched Terminator 1. And these are kids who did not grow up watching either one. And I have now gotten to see a species of human that I didn't know could exist, which is people who go into the movie assuming Arnold is a bad guy. And you get to see in real time on their face when he turns around and saves that kid, fucking shock. And yeah. It is amazing.
That's cool.
There's another one. There's a married couple that does it, and they watched through Highlander having no idea what Highlander was about. They didn't know it was about immortals. They're like, what the fuck? That guy's got a sword. And they don't know why he's absorbing the energy from the headless guy, and they have to figure it out in real time. And it's kind of awesome because it's like, that's the movie experience I kind of want to recapture. Yeah.
Well, that's right. Why you don't watch trailers?
Yeah,
because you can be that person going into a brand new movie and have it blow you away. You know,
I feel like this is my perpetual example for this trailer thing. But few people who know me know that I will actually defend The Village pretty intensely.
Okay.
So yeah, but the reason being, like, most of Shyamalan's movies, like essentially after like success of like Unbreakable and like
The Sixth Sense.
They're selling Shyamalan. They stopped selling the movie at one point. And so the thing that I always get frustrated about is, like, I remember the trailer, seeing the trailer for The Village after I saw The Village and being like, no wonder. No wonder nobody likes this movie, because you're not selling this movie. That's not what the movie is. It is a, it's almost a historical romance that has
sure.
these sort of mystery elements thrown in. But that's too, like, suspense movies in particular, I feel like are in this nebulous place as far as marketing, where one of two things happens. They throw it heavily into like drama Oscar bait territory, or they're like, this is schlock, this is horror. And nobody respects that. So we're just going to just do all the same, you know, flash, bang, roar, you know, frightened woman's face, you know, like weird panting, all that crap. But the movie itself, independent of the idea of it being sold as a horror movie, because again, make no mistake, it's not a horror movie. It's not.
It doesn't really have the beats of a horror movie.
Yeah, it's completely different pacing.
But that's the problem with marketing, is that marketing wants to put labels on things. Mm-hmm. And not everything fits really well with that label. And if somebody goes in because that's a label they like and they don't get it, they're going to rebel against it in a way that they don't. And I think that I understand why genre sections exist at bookstores and video stores and stuff. Because people, like, I want to watch something with a wizard in it. Mm-hmm. And I can narrow it down to the section that's more likely to have wizards. Or if I want to see something that's a romantic story about two characters, or I want to see an action movie, or it's, I get that. But you also end up seeing a bunch of stuff and you get a comfort zone. Yeah. And I think there is something magical about walking into a movie and just letting it happen to you. Mm-hmm. Not going in with expectations that, like, I just saw a movie without a trailer a couple of days ago. I saw The Night House with Rebecca Hall.
Oh.
Have you seen that?
Not yet. I'm curious.
That's on my list, but I haven't seen it.
I will highly recommend not watching any trailers, not getting into anything about it, and letting it happen, because it's not a movie that tells you right away what is happening, what is happening with her, what is the... So you kind of figure it out slowly. So it feels like you're solving the mystery of what is it? Why does she seem to be upset? Why are people kind of being kind of kid gloves around her? And I'm like, okay. And you just let it happen and you let her performance answer those questions for you rather than in a world.
Yeah. That's Personal Shopper.
Yeah.
Personal Shopper with Kristen Stewart. Oh,
I just got that from the library. So I want to see it. You can spoil it away. I don't
know. That's the whole point for me, is that I walked into that one where it was just like, I'm grabbing this off the shelf because it has the pink suspense sticker on it at work. That is the reason that I'm taking it. And also because she's been criminally treated by people for way too long, as far as her acting ability.
Because
she has.
Oh, did you see Underwater?
I actually have that sitting on my shelf right now.
She's
from
so
work
fucking
to watch.
Awesome in that movie.
I
She's
think
great.
That both her and Robert Pattinson have been punished for being in a badly written movie for so long.
Yeah.
People need to understand.
It's time to get rid of that. Honestly, it's time to get rid of it. When just watch The Lighthouse and then you'll think differently about Robert Pattinson.
That movie's fucking bonkers and incredible and so fucking weird, and I love it. And Robert Pattinson's great and Kristen Stewart's great. And if you just give them good material that isn't garbage and direct them well, because there is no way. I mean, it's just Phantom Menace is a great example of having a movie that has a deep cast of incredible actors in it who have to try to figure out how to play their character on their own, because it really feels like George Lucas isn't giving them a lot. Like this, again, Phantom Menace has Liam Neeson, Ewan McGregor, Natalie Portman, Brian Blessed plays a frogman in it. on paper, that's fucking great. There's a cameo by Samuel L. Jackson. This is cool. I mean, that on its just on paper sounds good, but it just like you can't watch that and start blaming the actors. You have to understand actors are not playing a game of Dungeons and Dragons. Yeah. They don't get to decide what their character says and does.
Yeah. Unless they have really wonderful and lucrative contracts.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. But I mean, again, I want to argue really in favor of just not treating every trailer like the Zapruder film, where you want to find out every beat of it. You're like, oh, who is that guy that appeared in one shot? Or it's like the Shang-Chi movie just came out and there's a shot of like the bad guy from the Incredible Hulk movie, the Abomination, makes a cameo in it. And I'm like, why give that away? Why not let that be a surprise?
Because everything's the marketing. It's like, look, we need you to buzz about this thing. Leaking is what trailers are.
Yeah.
Now, it's like, that's why we have so many like so-called leaks. It's just kind of like, yeah, we just need people to patter on about this for a while on the internet, collect the advertising revenue from all those different, you know, media criticism sites.
Let something be a surprise, you know? And it's like, sometimes you're just like, holy shit, something, this is happening. It's like everything with the new Spider-Man movie. Don't tell me anything. It's like, I know everybody who's in that movie, including all the special cameos, which should be special cameos. They gave away that Han came back from the dead in Fast and the Furious 9 in the trailer. Don't do that. You know how that would have been a moment of holy shit, and now I can't have it anymore.
Well, we're in a media catch 22, though, with that, because some of it is audiences want instant gratification. Again, they don't want any ambiguity because, you know, the whole Inception thing. Let's not go there.
But the need to overexplain everything now.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is that like they train you to expect to be over-explained too, because half the time the audiences are sitting there going, well, I mean, I need it, and I need it now. I needed it yesterday. Where is season whatever of Rick and Morty? You know, that kind of thing. It's just like you have to keep piling it on because people are so distractible. I mean, our brains have actually been rewired by social media to where our attention span is, what, 6 seconds?
Mm.
Whereas it used to be, I think, 12, like 10 years ago or something. You might have to check my exact numbers, but I know that it has shrunk significantly.
It really makes me, as someone who's film is my thing, and if I'm not spending time doing my filial duties or whatever, I'm usually watching film. And so when we talk about like, oh, I'll be happy to talk about Black Widow, and it's great to talk about stuff like Big, people who watch movies will almost always be watching a very narrow stripe of output from, what is it, like four media companies essentially now. Basically four media companies and maybe a smattering of other stuff. There is so much cinema in the world that just countries' whole entire output of cinema that make movies that do not treat their audience like they're idiots and assholes. And so people, I think, have been so institutionalized by the type of big ticket Hollywood blockbuster type of storytelling that everything is simple to stupid, right? Nothing is terribly complex, and everything is telegraphed appropriately. So things aren't particularly shocking.
But a movie
anymore
doesn't have to be brilliant or even thoughtful. It can be dumb. I just want a level of creativity that goes into the dumbness to make it fun and interesting. And to keep, like, I just saw for the first time, because it's on Netflix right now, is Deep Blue Sea.
Oh, that's so weird. That's another thing that's sitting on my pile, is I was going to rewatch Deep Blue Sea. I was watching nothing but shark movies.
Deep Blue Sea is not a smart film, but it knows what love is. And it is kind of incredible, because it's essentially a puzzle game. The premise is incredibly simple, and they find interesting and creative ways to get stuff out of there. It's a movie where, to cure Alzheimer's, they have injected sharks with a thing that gives them super brains. And this is a bad idea to anybody who thinks about it a little bit. So it's essentially, they're in an underwater base trying to get to the top so that they can escape, but the base is leaking and it's filling up with water, and sometimes you need to go down a level to go up a level somewhere else. So it feels a bit like a video game.
Cell phone game.
But as the rooms fill up with water, the shark can get in and wants to eat you and is super smart. And you get and they never kill the shark in the same way. The same trick does not work again because they're super smart sharks.
It's like the Borg, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the same thing is true of the movie Tremors, which it's essentially a movie that takes the premise of the floor is lava.
Mm-hmm.
And then the same trick doesn't work. Okay, I'm going to do this thing to escape these monsters that will eat me if I walk on the ground.
And then you have Anaconda.
Yeah.
Which I also just rewatched recently. Speaking of things that can and cannot kill giant snakes. I was just marveling watching that whole movie, where I was like, why is so much of this so spectacular for me to experience in an action movie? Like, competent and intelligent, you know, leads. kind of a fun thing. But then it's like, yes, we do need to blow up that tower with the snake coiling all the way to the top of it. And then also it can still hit the water, and also it can still be on fire, and also, and it just keeps piling on. And I'm like, I'm here for this. Like you said, Mike, it's stupid as hell, but you're having fun.
You're having fun,
but how stupid it is.
It doesn't challenge you, but it forces you to think a little bit, because you're like, what would I do in that situation? Oh, it's like, you know, you watch Tremors and they throw out a pipe bomb. The thing eats it, blows up.
Yes.
The second time it doesn't eat it. So the same trick doesn't work. The pole vault trick doesn't work again. So you have to, and the thing is, when you take the floor out of play, you have this totally different geography that you need to move around. And then guess what? Something goes wrong. And now you have to reevaluate the geography again. And you get to see things in Deep Blue Sea that are amazing, like LL Cool J trying to battle a shark in a flooding kitchen while he gets trapped in the oven. And the shark turns the oven on. So he's got to escape. But now the room's full of gas. And it's just like, it's kind of fucking spectacular. It's not brilliant. And then something happens in the end credits that I hadn't seen in a long time, and it just made me so fucking happy. It was an LL Cool J rap song from the point of view of it being a shark.
Sure.
And he's Perfect. Doing the plot to the movie in the lyrics. And I was so
He's Will Smithing.
He's Will Smithing it.
I love Will Smithing. I miss that so much. Especially if you wiki Wild Wild West.
This is why you get musicians in your movie.
Please.
So that they can do a song about the plot.
God, tell me exactly what happens and how just everything in the movie. And then just tell me about how you're so fresh and so fly as well.
Yeah.
In your performance in said movie. And I'm like, you are fresh and fly. I am buying that album.
But I'm not getting this at a new Blockbusters. You could
have had the first Suicide Squad movie go up a letter grade if Will Smith did a song at the end that was just about him shooting people through the eye with a gun.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that have been great?
That would have been better.
That would get my butt in the seat. That would.
Yeah. By the way, one of the movies, the only blockbuster that I've seen this year is The Suicide Squad.
I haven't seen it yet either.
It's actually really good. And it's even better because it feels like there's an actual artist hand at the till. It feels like a James Gunn movie. And it feels a little bit like the sort of movies that like Sam Raimi and Peter Jackson did before they started doing major blockbusters.
Okay. Oh, Bad Taste.
Yeah, where it's...
I love that movie.
It's sort of Taste.
It's bloody and a little bit subversive, and it's gleefully gross. And it also is the first movie blockbuster, especially from a major, you know, film franchise, you know, the DC Universe, where, you know how nowadays there's that sort of propaganda wing of the Pentagon that if you need to get like a Humvee or uniforms or an aircraft carrier in your movie, you have to give the script over to the Pentagon and they can make any changes they want to make sure that we can get, you know, instead of the chicken nuggets having vegetables in it, we got to get some
broken glass.
Yeah, yeah. Some broken glass. Okay. We got to get some state propaganda about how awesome the military is. That's why you have all those, you know, propagandistic shots in Michael Bay movies with jets flying over, and it's practically, so it's basically masturbating on a flag. So the Suicide Squad is the first movie I have seen in a long time where I'm like, there is no way that the Pentagon would sign off on this movie. There's absolutely no fucking way. It isn't just they'd have some notes, it's they would say no. Because the villain of the Suicide Squad is not the giant kaiju starfish. It's American foreign policy. And it is so fucking explicitly American foreign policy. And it isn't just that Amanda Waller is a rogue agent who's doing stuff on her own. It isn't an evil senator or an evil general who's doing their own thing and they get arrested because the rest of the government is good. There is a bit in the movie where Amanda Waller orders them to let a horrible thing happen to civilians because it's in a country that's anti-American and the president would be okay with that.
All right.
This is a movie where the real monster is Washington, D.C. Okay. And it's not even just a little bit. They are monsters and they are unrepentant. And the starfish actually has a more sympathetic backstory than any of the characters that send them on this mission.
God damn it. I'm going to watch this movie, aren't I?
It's so much better than it has a right to be. And it also has some of the wonderful rug being pulled out from under you moments in it. Have you seen it yet, Casey?
Mm-hmm, yep.
Like, they set you up for 20 minutes thinking these are your main characters, and then horrible things start happening to people.
They do the MacGruber thing in the movie. If you've ever seen MacGruber, what happens halfway through MacGruber?
No.
Okay. So it's memeified now, but you should watch that movie. It's for the Saturday Night Live movies. It's probably the best one that has been done since Wayne's World. Probably. Oh. Yeah.
Wow.
Of all their attempts to adapt really poor SNL sketches, this is probably the most funny one since Penelope Spheeris, you know.
They took things. The Suicide Squad is also wonderful because it feels like it does to these characters what Deep Space Nine did to the Ferengi, which is it took a thing that was broken and you go, you know what? We might as well just throw this out and buy a new one. Like, no, there are some parts here I can still use. And it takes even things that didn't work.
It's just a little airborne. It's still good. It's still good.
And anyway, they fix it. There is stuff that just works. It's also the best I've ever seen John Cena in anything before.
That's saying a lot.
Yeah.
It's fun because he's kind of a bro-y Captain America douchebag asshole. And just a jingoistic monster piece of shit. He's like a walking war crime, wearing a bright red and blue uniform. But, I mean, that is the only blockbuster I've really seen this year. And even that feels like it's this departure from something, because it feels like maybe it's just the fact that DC has just burned so many fucking bridges that they've decided that what they're going to do is just give free rein to artists to have fun with these characters and do some crazy cool things. But you know, that's not what I'm getting from Marvel right now. Marvel's got the formula, and, I'd rather have half of the movies be bad if half of them are kind of good and interesting and different. Cause it's like, can I have a moment that genuinely surprises me in a movie? But I would still say Suicide Squad is still in the bottom half of movies I've seen in theaters this year. I don't think I've seen anything genuinely bad. And I think the fact that I haven't seen Fast and the Furious 9, I haven't seen Black Widow, I haven't seen Shang-Chi, things that I would have rushed to see, I'm like, no. I ask myself, how badly do I want to see this? And a lot of times the answer is kind of like, yeah. And Nia isn't enough anymore. So the movies that I've seen this year, I wrote them all down.
Excellent.
One I saw on Netflix, but is definitely worth watching right away. I saw The Paper Tigers, which Casey had recommended, which is a martial arts movie about these guys who in their youth were these incredible martial arts kung fu prodigies, and they were the coolest guys in their neighborhood, and everyone wanted to challenge them to fights, and they were the baddest asses around. And at some point they had a falling out. They got old. They're in middle age. Most of them haven't done martial arts since they were teenagers, and they have the knees of a 40-year-old, and their teacher has just died under mysterious circumstances. And they've decided to take up the vow they had to sort of protect him and avenge him against possibly another evil student who used a forbidden tactic to kill their master. And they're really old and out of practice and haven't done this in a long time, where their brains still kind of know how to do this, but their bodies don't want to play along.
That sounds like committing to the premise in such a way that sounds really satisfying for me, because when I went back to California recently, I stayed with my little sister and her husband, who happens to be like huge into Karate Kid. And so we were sitting and watching Cobra Kai.
Yeah.
And I remember just the first couple episodes, and I'm like sitting there going like, I cannot wait for these old dudes to like just go for it. I don't know. And I'm sitting here being like, there's going to be so many popping knees. And I was like, I'm invested. Like, please, Julio, tell me that they don't try to like make this serious or something like that. Just admit that this is ridiculous. This is already just so ridiculous. And I didn't get to continue after that point, but it was, anyhow, Paper Tiger just sounds like, okay, that's what I want. Mm-hmm. When I started watching Cobra Kai, I was like, this is exactly what I want.
It's also a locally produced movie. It was made in Washington, and they had the script shopped around, and they were going to get someone in Hollywood to make it, but Hollywood told them that they wanted a Caucasian to be the lead. instead of an Asian American actor, which is what it was written for and by. And they were like, fuck it, we're doing it ourselves. So it was that rare thing where they're basically just like, oh, you know the bullshit that would normally happen to a movie to make it less good and less interesting? They just said, forget it, we're doing it ourselves.
Good on them.
But it's totally worth supporting.
Me see,
and it's on Netflix. Barely have to lift a fucking finger to watch it.
It's right there. It's pretty great. But the best movie I've seen, and I think we definitely want to do this as an episode, is The Green Knight. Which I believe is still in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
And I was shocked to find out that it's a movie that only has a $15 million budget. And for fantasy, that oftentimes says, oh, you're going to be walking around Burbank in the woods. This is going to look like Fireball, Fireball. but it's not. It when you have incredible actors, because Dev Patel is amazing. He's born to play the lead character of a movie.
And beautiful, beyond anyone's standard of beautiful.
It is so easy to project yourself onto him in a movie, probably more than any character. So even when his lead character does things as Gawain that are cowardly and selfish and in a wonderful Gaius Baltar kind of way, you sympathize with him even when you're kind of like, no, dude, I want you to be better. I want you to be better. And it's an interesting take on Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, where it sort of imagines Gawain as kind of a fail son. It's halfway Hunter Biden in the Holy Grail, where it's somebody who grew up around people that were successful leaders, and there's this expectation that he's going to follow in their footsteps, that one day he will be a great knight. But there's point A and point B, and he's in that fuzzy middle part, and he just kind of assumes it'll happen. A quest is thrown in his lap, and he's tested throughout on whether he can be the sort of knightly virtues of, if heroic and patient and courteous and generous and brave. And he fails a lot in this movie. And it's really about whether a person who does a stupid thing out of pride and the desire to impress other people, and then only after the fact realizes what it is that he has agreed to, and now has to follow through with his obligations because of what it means. And he's not a great knight. And you see him try to be a great knight. And he's not always good at it. And it's the fact that he fails so often that make the times that he succeeds really sing. And it's visually stunning. There are moments of awe in it. And it reminds me a little bit of Blade Runner 2049 in the sense that it allows you to quietly exist in the world and experience it happening without having to be plot or having to be action. There are moments that I look at that movie and go, in a big Hollywood blockbuster version of this, there would be a big CGI chase, or he would be running from a monster, or he would be tumbling while rocks are falling around him. But a lot of times it just lets you live in that world and it feels like you're him. And the sets they find, I believe this is filmed in Ireland, are sometimes both stark and terrifying. Like, if I camped out there, I would die. But it's also so beautiful in a terrifying way.
Well, let me ask you this, Mike, because, I mean, we've both seen it. I'm guessing you haven't seen it.
I haven't gotten to. I've been out of media world for a long time.
It's totally cool. I feel like that because we're in this pandemic situation where, all of the stuff that had been filmed in 2019 and the first couple months of 2020 were sort of in the can and being worked on. And the stuff that can get done from people's bedrooms has largely been cranked out, and everything else is just like being delayed. You know, the big stuff is being delayed. So we're kind of in this weird fallow period where something like The Green Knight or Pig can make a bigger splash, because what the fuck else are you watching? Stuff that would have fought to get on a lot of screens in the multiplex instead of in an art house screens are now in the multiplex. And that's definitely good. I would definitely, for me personally, I would say that The Green Knight is up on the top of my films that I've seen that have been released this year.
It is the best movie that I've seen this year.
But the thing that I want to say is like, I feel like it's a movie. I feel it's great and I love it. I feel like it's a movie that still people wouldn't have the patience for. And I'm saying that in really, unfortunately, not thinking too highly of my fellow man when I say that. But I also kind of feel like maybe based on our sort of high carb, high sugar diet of MCU films have made it so something like this would almost be, people would be allergic to, you know. And there's something that's really regrettable about that.
I might argue on that, that there are two reactions that I'm observing so far with people coming out of COVID. And it feels like either end of a spectrum. What I've been currently calling the mask of red death, like party today for tomorrow we may die, where people want they want their explosions, they want their instant gratification, they want their quippy one-liners and stuff because they're desperate after being sedentary essentially for so long. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing, which is people who have been forced into reintegration too early, or, you know, essential workers or things like that, folks that have been in this like traumatic stress state for so long, they want something ponderous. They want something emotional. They want something meaningful. And I've kind of seen both. Like I've had times that I've had such incredible exhaustion with the idea of just, again, watching any kind of like blockbuster thing where it's like, I can't have any more loud, chaotic, whatever. I'm going to watch Queen's Gambit again for like the eighth time. And then other times when I just wake up in the morning and again, it's like today is the day I'm watching Anaconda. I'm gonna go watch Anaconda. Mm. And so I think that people are in this weird psychological space where it's not quite anything goes, but it's kind of, everybody's in such a heightened emotional state that it's vacillating wildly.
Yeah.
For some. Yeah, that's my take anyway. Okay. I don't know how accurate it is for everyone, but I know that's my personal experience.
Radio vs. the Martians is hosted by Mike Gillis and Casey Doran. This podcast is recorded in beautiful Valverde in Seattle, Washington. Our chief engineer is Casey Doran, and our editor is Mike Gillis. Our original theme music is written and performed by James Wetzel. Special thanks to Sam Mulvey, Rob Kelly, James Wetzel, Paul Rue, Tobiah Panshin, Scott Kramer, Kyle Hepworth, and Todd Maxfield Matsumoto. Please take the time to rate and review our show on iTunes and Stitcher, and follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And if you'd like to support the show financially, please consider becoming one of our Patreon subscribers. Even just a dollar a month gives you access to exclusive episodes. And you can always find us online at RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Gotta eat too.